One of this year's races for the state legislature is a bit of a rarity, an open seat in a place that has not had one in a while. Oregon House District 5 is the southern end of Jackson County, generally from Medford south to the state line. Representative Peter Buckley is the current occupant and has been for a while. Buckley served for several sessions as the House co-chair of Ways and Means, meaning he was the top budget writer in the House. Now he's retiring. Pam Marsh, Democrat, got into the race early. Steve Ritchie, Republican, got into the race when Alan DeBoer opted to run for state senate instead after he won the primary. You'll hear from both candidates, Ritchie and Marsh, in turn, beginning with Pam Marsh. Welcome to the studio.
Oh, thank you. Delightful to be here.
So, your experiences, you are the co-owner of the Green Springs Inn and the executive director of the Ashland Emergency Food Bank, but you've got some government experience mixed in there as well.
Yes, I have sort of been on the periphery of nonprofit and government my whole adult life. I worked in California for 4 years for a state legislator who was down there. I served as executive director of something called the Santa Clara County Cities Association, which incorporated all of the dozen cities in Santa Clara County, and I worked with the elected officials and the city managers in those communities. I've been on planning commissions and served on the city council here in Ashland. I served on the planning commission in Palo Alto. So I have a variety of experience that I bring to this that touches government in a variety of ways.
Does it feel like a fairly natural move then to run for the Oregon State Legislature?
Well, being a candidate at this level is a whole new experience. But in terms of actually doing the job, I think the experience that I've had will serve me well.
What is the main motivator then in running, other than Peter Buckley's leaving and somebody needs to replace him?
Well, you know, when Peter decided to our shared consternation that he was not going to run again, I started looking at the discussions that were going on in Salem. And what I quickly realized is that we are at this time of tremendous transition, even I think you could say transformation, in many of the institutions that affect life here in Southern Oregon. We have a different view of our education system. We understand that it really starts at birth and follows a child through to career. We are in the middle of healthcare transformation. We are looking at needing to really pursue renewable energy resources with impending climate change. So many things are changing, and we have an opportunity right now to invest, to really build a state that is ready for that changing future, to make sure that we give families and communities the tools and resources they need to really cope and thrive in the coming years. So it was just too great of an opportunity.
When I look at your voters' pamphlet statement, you just mentioned climate change. Greenhouse mm-hmm. gas emissions are number one on your issue list. How should the state be approaching that?
Well, we're going to have to take a number of different steps, but I think that starts with a cap and trade or cap and invest system. There are various nuances as to how you would implement that, but in essence, what we would do is be placing a cap on greenhouse gas emissions to be utilized across the state. Over time, we would ramp that down. I think the whole cap and invest process provides an incentive for investment in new technology and job training, to move us toward a renewable future, which is where we need to be.
The general complaint about that is people see it as a drag on industry. So how do you keep it from becoming such a drag?
Well, you know, a cap and invest system is a pretty tried and true economic strategy. It was first used under Reagan to try to get lead out of gasoline. It's been used for ozone. What we're doing in cap invest is touching all sectors equally. So there is an opportunity for people to trade, to invest in alternatives. It's an across-the-board strategy that doesn't single out any one sector in an opportunistic way. So I think it's really a fair market strategy.
Let's talk about health care. Oregon broke some ground, certainly, with the way it's handled the Oregon Health Plan, its version of Medicaid mm-hmm. over the years. What can the state do more than it has, or is it good with what it's got now?
Well, I think we've made some tremendous strides forward. We know that about 90 to 95% of Oregonians now have some kind of health care. I mean, that's tremendous. Unfortunately, we also know that a lot of it is not accessible or affordable because we have these tremendously high deductibles. In some communities, it is very difficult to find a primary care physician. On the public side, that is the Oregon Health Plan side, we are starting to do something thanks to leadership by former Governor Kitzhaber and our own very dear Alan Bates that is incredible, and that is to invest in prevention and something we call the social determinants of health. That is, those health factors that aren't traditional markers, such as whether the quality of your housing, your domestic relationship, but that certainly affect your health down the way. So I think what we need to do is really keep up that focus on prevention because that is how you actually change the health of communities on the long term. And we need to figure out on the private side how to move those insurers more toward that same model of prevention. And there are a number of ideas about how you might do that, whether it's with a public option. You know, that's a discussion that's going to be front and center, I think, in 2017.
Pam Marsh, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Democrat running for Oregon House District 5 in southern Jackson County, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org if you'd like to join. It seems like you're a lot about prevention because one of the other things that you lay out in your platform is to develop programs for high-risk families to prevent abuse and prepare kids for kindergarten. So what kinds of program? I mean,
that's something that I've talked about a lot, and I'll give you three data points that I think lay that out. Number one is we know that about 90% of brain development happens before a child ever even gets to kindergarten. Number two, we know that at that kindergarten point, at this point across the state of Oregon, only about 40% of children are not ready for that experience. And number three, we know that your reading ability in third grade is a tremendous indicator of later involvement in the juvenile justice system and in high school dropout. So if you look at those things together, I think we can make a very strong case that one of the very best ways to invest your tax dollar is in services for children from birth to age five. Every child deserves high-quality services. Every parent needs the peace of mind of knowing their child, if they can't be with them or being nurtured, cared for by someone else, knowing that they'll be ready for kindergarten. But we have many parents who are unable to provide that for themselves. And children who have been in abusive or neglectful situations really need high-quality services to try to heal from those experiences while the brain is still, frankly, malleable.
Does this mean fixing up the services we have or bringing in new
ones? Well, I think it is a variety of those things. And we have a crisis nursery system across the state. It is underfunded. We have in Medford, our crisis nursery center, family nurturing center, is only able to take the most dire cases. We have employment-related daycare, which provides subsidies for parents who are working. Only about 20% of children who are eligible for that can actually be served in that system at this point. We have a Healthy Families program, which goes out and visits with first-time families. We need to expand that so that they're able to follow those families for a longer period of time if a family's in crisis. So it's a variety of things. And it is significant investment so that we know once a child gets to kindergarten that he or she is in its very best position to be able to thrive at that level. So it's an incredibly important investment and one that I've talked a lot about.
How then to bring up, once we get a little later into life, Oregon's low graduation rate hovering around 70%. What's the next legislature going to need to do to keep boosting this?
Well, I think it's that cradle to career perspective first that you start with. I mean, you start by investing in children at birth, and the things that I've just outlined a minute ago I think are incredibly important to making sure that a child is in good shape when they get to kindergarten. We need to look at lowering class size, clearly, in our K-12 system. At the high school level, I think it's important that we provide alternative tracks for kids. There is a very active effort here in the Rogue Valley to really begin to develop internships for students, to get them out in the community, to connect them with the community college system and the university system so that they can start earning dual credits, which means that when a child does leave high school and moves on to the next phase, whether it's training or whether it's a university or community college experience, that they've already got a great head start on that. So I think motivating and really providing a clear path for children forward is a really important step to that graduation rate.
These programs take money. Oregon's got a fairly ongoing issue with trying to make sure that the money comes in on a regular basis. Measure 97 is on the ballot. Are you in support of that?
I do support Measure 97. I think it is not perfect. But it is a road. It's what is in front of us. Beginning with property tax reform in the 1990s, Measure 5 and then 47 and 50, we've unfortunately been on a path toward disinvestment in this state. And it is no wonder, as a result, that we have class sizes and graduation rates near the bottom of the 50 states. The Measure 97, which would be a 2.5% corporate tax on C corporations over $25 million in sales, is a would provide about $2 to $3 billion that would be invested in healthcare, education, seniors. These are the investments we need to make if we want to build a state that is really providing the kind of services and the path forward for our communities and our families.
All right, Pam Marsh, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.